Class is in session. You're listening to Squat University by Dr. Aaron Horshick.
Let's go!
Now, let's start the show.
Hey, what's up, podcast listeners? Thank you so much for checking out today's show. This is episode 90 of the Squat University podcast. The goal with each and every one of these shows is to bring you as much value-packed content to help you move better in the gym and in life, decrease your body's aches and pains, and help you reach your true athletic potential. Now, today's podcast is sponsored by Barefoot Athletics. Look, if you're a serious strength athlete and you really value how well you're performing, you know that the type of shoe you wear can make a big difference. Now, for those of you who like to wear a flat sole shoe, especially in the sport of powerlifting like a Chuck Taylor, you need to ditch those shoes and check out the Ursus by Barefoot Athletics. They have a super wide toe box that allows you to naturally splay your toes out and use your foot as it was naturally designed. No more cramming your foot into a narrow toe box and smashing your foot into an unnatural position. I've been using the Ursus shoes for the past couple months for any non-Olympic weightlifting movements, so my squats, my deadlifts, presses, and I absolutely love them, and I think you will too. If you go to the barefootathletics.com website, that's B-E-A-R, like the animal, and use the code SQUATU, you can get 10% off your order, and that's for the Ursus or anything else on their website, like the correct toes that I've also been using, and I'm going to make some more content for in the future. So again, barefootathletics.com, check out these shoes. I promise you, you will love how they make you feel and how you can perform with them. Now, with that being said, let's get to today's content. Today, we are going to be talking on the topic of whether or not squats should be performed to full depth. How deep should you squat? Now, if you look around the internet today, there are a number of opinions when it comes to optimal squat depth. You're going to get some experts that claim that squatting as deep as possible, so ass to grass, is the only way to perform the lift. If you're not squatting ass to grass, you're doing something wrong. On the opposite end of the spectrum, we have some other people out there, and we're not going to name names, that say that if you squat below 90 degrees, you are putting yourself in a horrible position and setting yourself up for injury. You are going to get injured, basically, if you squat deep. Who do we believe? To answer this question, we're going to take a trip back in history. This is called History 101, part of the podcast. We're basically going to discuss where a lot of this fear originated. To do this, we have to take a trip back all the way to the 1950s. Now, we can trace the safety concerns with the deep squat back to a man by the name of Dr. Carl Klein. Now, Dr. Carl Klein worked at a university down in Texas in the later 50s, and he was doing some research with the goal to understand the reason behind the rise in the number of college football players sustaining serious knee injuries. Now, he suspected that these knee injuries, and I'm talking things like torn ACL, torn MCL, he suspected that these injuries were in part due to the use of full range of motion deep squats when the team was weight training. So Klein basically came up with this crude self-made instrument that he would fasten around the knee, almost looked like a brace. And this instrument would measure the laxity of the knee when different forces were placed on it. Now, in 1961, he released the findings from his first studies. And what he found was that there was a connection between deep squatting with these athletes and the ligament stiffness in their knees. And he claimed that this was direct evidence that athletes who performed deep squats were potentially compromising the stability of their knees in setting themselves up for injury. And he went on to recommend that all squats were performed only to a parallel depth. So we should never squat below parallel. Now, Klein's theory was eventually picked up in a 1962 issue of Sports Illustrated. Now, if you remember back into the day, and I know a number of people listening to this podcast have no idea what I'm talking about, but there was not a thing called ESPN back in 1962. You basically got a lot of your sports information from the newspaper and from magazines. We weren't watching a lot of, you know, cable networks, or there was no internet to, you know, spread all this information all over the world. You basically got it from a lot of these magazines and newspapers and things like that. So whenever his theory hit the newspaper stand and the magazine stand, it just spread like wildfire. Basically, it was the catalyst that spread this fear of deep squatting in our need to save the knees of all the athletes over the world. It just spread like wildfire. Soon after, the American Medical Association, so the AMA, came out with a position statement based on Dr. Carl Klein's work, cautioning against the use of deep squats. The Marine Corps even eliminated this exercise they used to do called the squat jumper exercise from their physical conditioning programs. And even the superintendent for New York City schools issued a statement banning gym teachers from using the full depth squat in their PE classes. Ridiculous. There were obviously some individuals who disagreed with Dr. Carl Klein at the time. For example, in May of 1964, Dr. John Pulskamp, a regular columnist in the notorious Strength and Health magazine, which I'm sure some of you older strength athletes may understand or remember, he wrote this column where he said, "Full squats are not bad for the knees, and they should certainly not be omitted out of fear of knee injury." But despite his best efforts, Dr. Pulskamp was not successful because this damage that Dr. Carl Klein inflicted had been done and spread all over the world, basically. Strength coaches across the country, specifically in the U.S., stopped teaching the full-depth squat. In some cases, the squat was completely dropped from training programs for certain athletes, all because of this one study that was done in the later 50s by Dr. Carl Klein. Now, if you know anything about research, you know that we cannot make a definitive cause and effect statement based on one research article. You have to validate research findings with a number of follow-up studies. That's how we understand better connections and don't just say a correlation equals causation. Now, thankfully, for the advancement in exercise science and biomechanical research that took place over the next couple decades after Dr. Carl Klein's original research, we've learned much more about the forces that are sustained on the knee joint during squats. Now, what I want to do right now is go over what we've learned over the past couple decades so we can better understand exactly what's happening to the knee joint. So I'm going to call this part Squatology 101. Whenever you squat, your knee sustains a couple different types of forces. There's shear force and there's compressive force. Now, shear forces are the measurement of how much the bones in our knee, like the femur and the tibia, want to slide over one another in the opposite direction. So one moves forward, one moves back. That's a shear force. Now, if these forces are high enough, it can definitely be harmful to the ligaments inside the knee, like the ACL or the PCL. These ligaments, they're very small, but they are some of the primary structures that hold our knee together and limit excessive forward and backward translation. Now, the other force, like I said, was compressive forces. Now, this is the amount of pressure from two parts of the body basically pushing onto each other, so smashing down. Now, there are two different areas that sustain this type of force in the knee. There's the meniscus that absorbs the opposing stresses between the tibia and the femur. So when things are smashing together there, you have your meniscus, almost like an air bubble that's going to, or an airbag is a better description, that can sort of lighten the blow and soften the cushion right there. Now, the second type of compressive force that's found at the knee is on the backside of the patella, so the kneecap against the femur. And it also has a very thin line of cartilage as well. And for people that have had knee pain before and gone to a medical doctor, you may have heard the term chondromalacia, which is basically a description of what happens when the smooth lining of that cartilage on the backside of the patella has worn away. So basically, there's a hole in the cartilage, and that is because of too much compressive force on the backside. Now, when we look at these forces, shear and compressive, we find that they're often inversely related. What this means is that as the knee bends, so as you go into a deeper squat, the compressive forces rise, while shear force decreases. Now, in the very, very bottom, there is an increase in shear force, for sure, but there's a very, very sharp rise in compressive force as well, which we will talk about why that is so important in this next section, which we're going to talk about. We're going to call it Ligament Safety 101. Now, some medical authorities have cautioned against the use of deep squats because of the excessive strain placed on the ligaments. However, it appears that the concerns are not based really in science or research. Science now tells us that the ligaments deep inside our knee are actually placed under very little stress in the bottom of a deep squat. So let's take your ACL, for example, your anterior cruciate ligament. It's one of the most well-known ligaments in the knee because it is torn so often, and it's a very dramatic injury that takes someone out of their game for a long time. Especially we see this in baseball, or not as much baseball, football, basketball, and soccer. Those are going to be your main sports. Where you're going to be injured, you tear that ACL, and you're probably out of the season for at minimum 6 to 9 months. Now, the stress on the ACL during a squat is actually the highest during the first 4 inches of the squat descent. So basically when the knee's bent to around 15 to 30 degrees. As the squat depth increases, the forces placed on the ACL significantly decrease. In fact, the highest forces ever measured on the ACL during a squat has only been found to be about 25% of its ultimate strength, basically the force needed to tear the ligament. So it's a very safe movement on the ACL. Let's talk about the other ligament deep inside the knee, the PCL, posterior cruciate ligament. This is the second ligament that's found deep inside, and during the squat, it sustains max forces just above a parallel squat. So remember, the ACL is loaded at a shallow squat, so like 15 to 30 degrees of knee bend. The PCL, it's going to be maximally loaded at about a parallel position around 90 degrees of knee flexion. But just like the ACL, this ligament is never placed under excessive stress during a squat. The highest recorded forces on this ligament have only been about 50% of the estimated strength of a young athlete's PCL. So in fact, science has shown that the deeper you squat, the safer it is on the ligaments within your knee. Harmful shear forces are dramatically decreased due to an increase in the other force, compression. So the muscles of our legs work to stabilize the knee. People will call this the wrapping effect on the knee. Almost like you put wraps around your knee to help you squat a lot of weight. You see this a lot in powerlifting. Well, your body's naturally doing that with its own muscles, fascia layers, other different tissues around the knee. It creates its own wrapping effect by increasing compression. So as you squat, the hamstrings are working with the quads and all the other tissues that surround the leg to limit this excessive shear force by increasing compression, and basically you're gonna limit any of that excessive motion deep within the knee. So the ACL and the PCL stay unharmed no matter how deep you squat. So what do we now know? The original studies by Dr. Carl Klein, they claimed that squatting deep stretched out the ligaments in the knee that hold it together and ultimately leave it unstable. So basically his belief was that when you executed deep squats in your training, you stretch these ligaments out so that when you try to go do field sports like football or court sports like basketball, you had an inherently unstable knee. That's why you hurt it. That's why you tore your ACL. That's why you tore your MCL, is because your training basically loosened your knee up and you were more susceptible to injuring it. However, just like I talked about before, whenever we have an idea with research, where one study claims something, they find a very high correlation in something, we need to do follow-up studies in order to validate that claim, to see, all right, just because there's an increase in murders during the summertime, where there's also an increase in ice cream sales, does that necessarily mean that there's a direct cause and effect connection? We have to look into this more. Well, some scientists eventually decided to look into the studies done by Dr. Carl Klein. So they used a copy of Klein's instrument in their own studies, and their findings disproved his original research. They found that athletes who used the deep squat had no difference in the laxity of their knees than those who only squatted to parallel. So here's what we actually find. Science has shown that squatting deep may actually have a protective effect on our knees by increasing its stability. In 1986, there was a group of researchers that compared knee stability among a couple groups of athletes. They had powerlifters, basketball players, and runners. Now, they took the powerlifters, they said, go do a heavy squat workout. They had the basketball players, they said, go practice for an hour, and obviously doing a lot of running and jumping. And they had the runners, they say, go run, I think it was like a 10-kilometer race. Now, after that heavy squat workout, and after the basketball practice, and after the running, they took them all back together, and they retested their knee stability using that Klein instrument. So they did before test, their intervention, and then the after test. What they found was that the powerlifters actually had more stability in their knee than the basketball players who just practiced for over an hour, and the runners who just ran for a while. In 1989, another group of researchers were able to show that competitive weightlifters and powerlifters had knee ligaments that were less lax than those who had never squatted before. So they had built up more stability in their knee ligaments than those who did not squat. Again and again, research is showing that the deep squat is a safe exercise to include in a healthy athlete's training program, no matter how deep you are squatting. Now, here's the one thing we obviously have to understand. Can deep squatting be harmful? Is there any risk? And the answer is yes. There is no lift that you can perform in the weight room that does not have an inherent risk to it because you are moving big weight. Now, theoretically, the most damage that the knees would sustain from deep squats would be due to the excessive compression forces sustained at the knee joint in the very deep position. Remember, as you squat deep, there is a rise in compression forces at the knee. So what would this theoretically do? It would cause the meniscus of the knee and the cartilage on the backside of the patella to wear away. Now, while an increase in compression would lead to a greater susceptibility for injury, there has again been no cause and effect relationship established by science. If this were true, we would expect to see extreme amounts of arthritis in the knees of weightlifters and powerlifters. And this is not the case. There's very little evidence of any excessive cartilage wear in the knees of weightlifters and powerlifters that have been lifting for a long time. In fact, there was a research article called Degenerative Joint Disease in Weightlifters, Fact or Fiction. Now, it's an old article from 1980, but basically they looked at a number of very experienced weightlifters and they identified different areas of arthritis and compared it to general norms for general population. And what they found was that Olympic weightlifters and powerlifters at the knees do not have greater arthritis than general population. Now, the weightlifters had greater risk of arthritis in a couple other areas of their body, specifically like the shoulders, compared to the powerlifters because of the overhead motion of the Olympic lifts. But as far as the knees go, the results were showing that they were very similar to just general population. There was no increased risk of arthritis because you're lifting heavy all the time. Now, here's the big thing that you need to understand when it comes to the injury risk for squatting deep is it also comes down to not just is deep squats bad, but are you performing those deep squats with good technique? What we find time and time again is that if you perform a squat to full depth and your technique quality does not break down and you have good coordination and good mobility to allow for that high movement quality, your body can sustain that given a good training program. What I find is that athletes who develop issues like knee pain or hip pain and they attribute it to squatting deep, I often find it's because they're not moving well. And here's the deal, is a lot of times people will say, oh, I'm moving well, I have great technique. But it's not until they come to me for an evaluation and I'm able to specifically illuminate their movement problem that was often blinded to them. And then they're like, oh, wow, that does make sense. For example, I'll have an athlete, their right knee hurts because of squatting or when they're squatting. And they come to me and we find that they have a 10 degree difference in hip internal rotation on their right versus their left. Or maybe they have just a tiny bit more pronation on their right leg than their left because of a little stiffness in their ankle, or maybe they're missing a little bit of tibial rotation. Sometimes these differences side to side, these imbalances that lead to pain, are very, very minute. And that's why whenever you're sustaining an injury, whenever you're weight training, you don't just sustain that injury all at once. It's not like something where you go down, have one squat, and boom, there's pain. While you may eventually have pain that sort of comes out in one training session, it is often because the cause of that pain has been building for some time. It's a movement issue, like a scar that you're slowly picking at, and that over time and over time you're picking, eventually that scab is opened up and you're bleeding again. So that's how injuries occur in the weight room. And if you have pain that develops when you are squatting deep, we can point to one or two things. A, you're trying to max out every single day, or you're squatting way too heavy too often, because too much load is not a good thing. Your body's not going to recover between training sessions. Eventually, tissues can only sustain so much load before optimal training and optimal recovery are exceeded and pain sets in. More often than not, what I find is that is a movement-related issue, in that athletes are having these small imbalances. And even though they believe they're squatting with good technique, because they're maybe squatting with better technique than people they have seen around them, but it is not optimal technique. And when you don't have optimal technique, your body does not sustain these forces well, and eventually it leads to a culmination of these forces on certain tissues that have been overloaded, and eventually pain sets in. So I would challenge any single person that says that they squatted ass to grass for a long time with great technique and optimal loading patterns, and pain started. I would say it was because they either were not moving with good technique, or their training loading scheme was not optimal to allow for adaptation to the training program. So here's our considerations for squatting deep. Let's wrap up with this. Every coach must consider a few things when determining optimal squat depth for an athlete. Because here's the deal. Here's the question that a lot of people are wondering. Does that mean that everyone just squats deep? Do we all squat ass to grass? Is parallel what we're shooting for? Everyone should have the capability to perform a body weight air squat, no weight at all, just your body weight, to full depth, period, ass to grass. If you don't, if you cannot sit your butt on your heels, it means that your body is missing something. You are missing either required mobility, stability, or both. There's something that you're missing in your body's capabilities that is limiting your potential to perform a full depth squat. That being said, the depth of a barbell squat or the depth of a weighted squat is going to be based on a couple of things. First thing, the requirements of an athlete's sport. Think about a weightlifter. A weightlifter needs to be able to establish strength and stability in a very deep position. Why? When you look at the sport of weightlifting, you have the clean, you have the snatch, and those are or clean and jerk. Those are the two movements that you are graded on, you are judged on in competition. In order to be as efficient as possible during those movements, we have to be able to catch those and receive those lifts as deep as possible. Clearly, that's why you can full depth clean much more than you can power clean. So in order to establish that strength in that full depth receiving position for the clean or the snatch, we want to be able to take our back squats, our front squats, our overhead squats, we want to be able to take them as deep as we want to be able to receive them. And in building our capacity for a full depth squat for a weightlifter, it's going to help build capacity to handle big weights in your clean and in your snatch on the competition platform. So this is going to go for your weightlifters and CrossFitters, especially CrossFitters that are trying to be in competition mode for CrossFit. If you want to perform the snatch and the clean jerk, ideally, I want you to be able to squat as deep as possible. On the other hand, a barbell ass to grass squat is not necessarily optimal for a powerlifter. Obviously, in competition, they need to be able to go just below a passing grade, which is hip crease below the tops of the knees. So they need to be able to go to a passing grade. So for that reason, they need to be able to find the squat depth and stance width that allows them to hit full depth, maintain optimal technique, maintain strength, and be able to lift as much as possible, because that's the goal of the sport. In the same sense, let's talk about a football player or soccer player. How deep do they need to squat? I would say first and foremost, we look at their body weight squat. We see, can they squat to full depth body weight? Do they have necessarily mobility of their ankles, their hips, pelvic control? And then when it comes to barbell squat, technically, I think it depends on the individual. I want the person to squat as deep as possible while maintaining optimal technique. If someone can only squat a little bit past parallel and then butt wink occurs or their knees collapse, I'm not going to push them to squat deeper because that's going to break down their movement competency, their movement control, and their movement quality. That has to be the highest priority. So an athlete's squat depth is always going to be limited by their ability to do so with great technique. Now, obviously, that means sometimes we need to train what we can train, while we fix what we can fix. And I'm not going to have an athlete squat all the way down to a certain depth if they're going to lose their technique. For a coach, what does that mean? Maybe you have a couple players. Some of them are new to training. Some of them are very experienced. That may mean we need to have an athlete at the start learn how to box squat to a position where they can perform a great quality squat and maintain their technique quality. And then eventually, as we improve their mobility, we take maybe a goblet squat deeper, eventually introduce them to a barbell again. So there's no one size fits all. There's a lot of blending in the art and science of training at this point. The other thing we need to consider when we're talking about squat depth is an athlete's injury history. Now, often athletes are going to ignore their pain in their pursuit of performance. The phrase no pain, no gain, and know the difference between hurt and injury, that does not apply to the weight room. Pain's like a warning light in our car. The light is an indication that something is wrong. And just as ignoring your car's warning light is going to lead to engine problems eventually, pushing through pain in the weight room will lead to your body breaking down eventually. So for this reason, if an athlete is injured and has, let's say, knee pain, do I want them to squat deep through that knee pain? Probably not. Do I want them to still squat? Potentially, because it's often a common cornerstone of my rehab programs. So for that reason, depth of the squat must be limited to a pain-free range of motion if we want to stay healthy long-term. So what's another practical application? I talked about the box squat before. Coming back from injury, patellar tendinopathy, that's something that I commonly see, especially in my young jumping athletes. While the tendinopathy injury is very, very related to load, so the more load we place on the body, the more pain that someone feels in their knee, it's also often determined by how much depth someone is squatting to, because the more knee over toe translation someone has can sometimes cause a flare-up in patellar tendon pain. So for that reason, having someone just squat to a box may allow me to still train what I can train while I fix what I can fix. So again, there's no one size fits all. We have to understand a lot of the complexities in context to how deep should I squat. So we have to understand goals. We have to understand how well someone can move. And we also have to understand their injury history. So after all that, what's the big takeaway? What have we found since the early 60s? Contrary to the mainstream belief, we now know that squatting deep, or ass to grass as many people put it, is actually not as dangerous as Dr. Carl Klein originally made it out to be. Research again and again has failed to support the theory that deep squats are bad for the knees in healthy athletes. Now, here's just one more piece of evidence that I wanted to share with you guys today. I know some people, my exercise science nerds out there, really like to dive into the research. Here is an abstract reading. So again, I've read the full study. I encourage you to if this is something that you're interested in. But this is from a study by Hagen and Hartman et al. From Sports Medicine Journal. This is from 2013. And basically, they looked at all the different stresses placed on the body and injury risk during lifting. And here's what they said. Provided that technique is learned accurately under expert supervision and with progressive training loads, the deep squat presents an effective training exercise for protection against injuries and strengthening of the lower extremity. Contrary to commonly voiced concerns, the deep squat does not contribute to increased risk of injury to passive tissues. And this was a study that looked at over 164 current research articles that are available out there. It's a massive review, and that's what they came up with. So again, after all of this, I hope that you have a better understanding for this. Athletes with healthy knees performing the full depth squat with good technique should not cause injury as long as excessive loads are not used. And what does excessive loads mean? You don't max out every single day. You're not squatting heavy, heavy, heavy. You've got some light days, some medium days, some heavy intensity days, some medium intensity days. Throughout a year, you have that cyclical motion. Programming training intensity is very important. And then you have that mixed with good technique. You should be able to squat Aster Grass all you want. So that is it for today's podcast. I just want to say thank you guys so much for listening to the show. It really means so much to me. If you would at this time take a screenshot of the podcast that you're listening to on your phone and share it on Instagram story and tag me at Squat University, I will be forever grateful. I really appreciate sharing the show with your friends. It really means so much to me. And just a final update before we go today. For those of you who are interested in the Squat University seminar, I had one planned this summer for later June in Chicago. But obviously, because of everything that's going on right now with the coronavirus pandemic, I'm going to move that to October 10th and 11th weekend this fall. Same location. In Chicago. So hopefully things are blown over by then. But if you would like to get on top of your ticket and get that ordered, we have Saturday available and Sunday available. Saturday, the first day, is all about movement and understanding and diagnosing, screening movement issues that hold us back from great technique in the squat. And then we're also going to talk about injury management, diagnosis, everything with injuries on Sunday. So if you head on over to squatuniversity.com and click on the upcoming seminars tab at the top, you can get your tickets ASAP before they disappear. So until next time, guys, happy squatting.
That's it for today, class, on Squat University by Dr. Aaron Horschig. For more exclusive content, log on to squatuniversity.com.